All right. Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan and I am an alcoholic. Just a little bit of housekeeping. We will be recording and publishing the audio only portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. All right. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. And you should be able to unmute if you'd like to introduce yourself. So, David, would you mind reading the AA preamble for me? Put it up.
I just forgot how to unmute. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David. Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. I'm excited for the speakers. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety.
Thanks for reading. All right. All right. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're going to be discussing step 12, part one. Please welcome our panel. We have Sherry and Ross. I'm excited to hear them both. All right, so I'm gonna share the paragraphs, and what I'll do is read, for those of you who haven't been here, I'll read the paragraph or two, however it's laid out, and each of our panel will share for however long they see fit on them, usually around 5 minutes or so, and then we'll keep moving on with that. All right. Alrighty. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And this is on page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And I think we're going to let Ross take it away since he's a Simple Actions veteran.
All right. Thanks, Morgan. I'm Ross. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for inviting me, David. He invited me a few weeks ago, kind of spur of the moment. And I had to say no, because it was like a next day sort of thing. It was like a Sunday. Can you do it? No, I think it was a Tuesday. I was eating dinner with Morgan. That's what it was. I was eating dinner with Morgan. And he looks at me and says, David wants to know if he could speak next Monday. And I looked at my calendar and I couldn't. But I said, but I can do it the next time. So just let me know. And that happens to be tonight. So here I am. I'm always trying to answer the call of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me get rid of some, or get through some of the housekeeping items. My sobriety date is January 23rd, 2015. So if I hang on there another week, come Sunday, I'll be picking up a medallion in my home group, which I do have a home group. The We Are Not Saints group. We meet every Saturday and Sunday at 6 o'clock out here in Chicks Beach. We meet in person. We're a literature meeting. We're big book on Saturday. We're 12 and 12 on Sunday, where we do both steps and traditions. I also have a sponsor. I talk with him regularly. Tomorrow is our scheduled meeting night, where we're reading Emotional Sobriety, and we read a few stories a week and talk about what we've read. And I also participate in service work. So that's all the housekeeping items. And I'll qualify myself quickly. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous on January 23rd, 2015, with everything in my life ruined. I had nowhere to turn. I had disappointed everyone that loves me. I'd ruined a career. My bank account read negative several tens of thousands of dollars, and I didn't know where to go. And every day I woke up and I said, today is the day that I'm not going to use. Today's the day that I'm not going to drink. With all these problems piling up day after day after day, I still couldn't quit drinking and using. And I knew that was my problem. And I had no solution for it. And it didn't work anymore until I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meeting was January 24th of 2015. I was a paying customer of the Psych Center, and a bunch of folks like you came up there at 12:30, 1 o'clock on a Saturday. I was 36 years old. I'd never been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. But what you all showed me was the 12th step in action, which is what we read tonight. And I immediately identified with your story. I particularly identified with what you all said that it was like. I thought, man, I relate to these people. I'm exactly like them. I share a similar story. They know exactly how I feel. And I thought I was completely alone. But what I didn't understand was the way that you talked about living your life in the present. See, I'd never lived a life like that. I'd never lived a life free. I'd never lived a life without a heavy burden on my chest. You know, I'd never lived, you know, pretty much any stint of time since the age of 14 without putting a drink of alcohol or some drug into my system. Like, I just didn't get it. But what you told me gave me that ray of hope. And it was just enough to say, you know, when I get done with this 30 days, this 30 day sentence, which was the way that I looked at it, I said, I'm going to give this AA thing a shot. And maybe, just maybe it'll work for me. So getting into the reading, I have underlined a couple of these. I have my book out. I have a couple of sentences underlined. But this tells me on page 89 that nothing will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics, right? And I've been doing this thing for a little while, right? And I still have to remember, I have to come to meetings, and I have to work with other alcoholics, and I have to read this book to remember that nothing, no matter what happens, the best defense that I have against the next drink is working with another alcoholic. Now, that for me comes in many forms. Yes, that comes with working with sponsees. I've been extremely blessed to have many guys in the Chicks Beach area and around Tidewater ask me for help. I mean, that's a blessing, right? To sit down and do that one-on-one work. But it also includes showing up to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I can share the message of hope, the same message that those first members of Alcoholics Anonymous that I met shared with me. That's intensive work. That hour that I'm in that meeting sharing and listening and shaking the newcomer's hand after the meeting, that is intensive work with our other alcoholics. Friday night, my friend Jen and I were going to go to the Psych Center. Friday night, I'm going to carry the message just like you all did for me that first day, right? So when all else fails, I must remember that in order for me to ensure immunity from drinking, I've got to work with other alcoholics. And then I love that second paragraph, and I'll pause here in just a minute. But I love that second paragraph about life taking on a new meaning. You see, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my life had zero meaning. I've already told you about it, right? And today, the exact opposite is true. I'm an important member of my team at work. I have a great relationship with my wife and my kids today. My in-laws like me again. And I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous who I feel makes a difference in my local community here, this little corner of Chicks Beach. Like, my life has taken on a new meaning because I do have the ability to uniquely help other alcoholics. And then I love that part about watching others grow. If you stick around Alcoholics long enough, you'll see a lot of people like me that came in completely broken, completely shattered, and their lives are restored by a higher power. And I've been able to watch that happen time and time again with people that I sponsor, with people that I don't. And that's what keeps me coming back. So I'll share more later, but I'll pass it over to Sherry now. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much, Ross. Hi, I'm Sheree, and I am an alcoholic. I will also, hello, everyone. Thanks again, Dave, so much for having me. It's always it's an honor to be able to continue to show up for AA. You know, it really is, because AA gave me really a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I did not come in here on a winning streak. I was not doing great when I showed up here. So I'll briefly qualify myself also. My sobriety date is May 19th of 2005. I have a sponsor. I am still actively sponsored. We do a meeting also on Thursdays is our day. And I have the privilege of working with other alcoholics in this program. And I belong to a home group. It's called Fourth Dimension. We meet on Tuesday nights at 7:30. We are a hybrid meeting, so we are in person, but I can also put our Zoom link in the chat if you want. I just didn't have it ready. It's a 1-hour speakers meeting. I did not come in here on a winning streak. So the first time I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in a rehabilitation facility, and I sat in these meetings, and I had well-intentioned people trying to carry a message to me, and I did not want what y'all had. And fast forward 4 years later, what I brought to you folks was somebody who is absolutely broken. You know, I had drank and used everything good out of my life. I was, when I came to AA, you know, I had been homeless, living on the streets, doing what I had to do in order to support myself. My family and friends, had to separate from me because of the pain that my alcoholism and that I was inflicting upon them. So I didn't really have that option anymore. And I just didn't have a whole lot going on. I was beaten and broken. I was unemployable. I was a mess. And I was sent to live. So I was in jail for the umpteenth time. And from jail, I was sent to another rehabilitation facility, which also then sent me to a recovery house. And I'm live up in York, PA, and we have a lot of sober living facilities in our vicinity. And it was in there that two sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous carried a message to me. And it was a message truly of weight and depth. It was a message of sponsorship, of 12 steps, of a higher power, which I'm going to choose to just call God because it's one syllable and everybody knows what I mean when I say it. I watched these women, these sober, active women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had something that I had never seen before. They were happy in their sobriety. You know, they really were. And they introduced me to the woman who became my sponsor. She's still my sponsor today. I like to joke that I've kept her sober for 16 years, but she never laughs when I say that. So, but I'm going to keep saying it anyways. And she started taking me through the 12 steps, and, you know, we outlined a fourth and a fifth step, and I did that, so she outlined, you know, a fourth and a fifth step. We did that. I started making amends, and then I was sitting here smiling at this part because it brought up this memory I have of sitting in her apartment and her reading that first paragraph and her saying to me, it's time to make me a grand sponsor. And I thought that was a tremendous amount of pressure. Like I was felt like I was being told to have a baby. But you know, we laughed and you know, she said, no, it's time. It's intensive work is what we do. And you know, my sponsor loved to throw out zingers, like things like, you know, you might be the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous somebody ever seen. So you better be a good one. And I would like think about that. And I would, you know, would come up at weird times, like usually right before I wanted to lose my temper at work, you know, or behave badly. And then that thought would come to my head. And, you know, and so, you know, so I started doing, so I started to be an example, and my sponsor was big on emphasizing this idea of carry this message. And, you know, she said, it's not your message or my message. It's the experience of the 12 steps, you know, and the program of actions outlined in the big book of trusting God, cleaning house and helping others, you know? And so I started doing that, and I've been really privileged to work with a lot of people, you know, just simply in a lot of ways by suiting up and showing up and saying, okay, you know, which my sponsor taught me is just about the most spiritual word I can ever say, you know? And, you know, and I started, so I worked intensely with her. I took on service positions in my home group. And then eventually I started sponsoring people too. And truly going into the second one, you know, I have had a fellowship grow up around me. You know, I've watched these people come in and they've been beaten and they've been broken. And they, and I've sat down with them and I said, me too. And I made them the promise that my sponsor made me before we did my fifth step, which is you don't ever have to be the person who walked into Alcoholics Anonymous again, you know? And, because in, you know, 16 years, I've made a lot of mistakes, but I haven't had to be her, you know? And we started, you know, we go through these steps and we start, you know, later in this book, it talks about like, you know, we walk hand in hand in the path with God. And, you know, and I've watched them, I've watched, you know, their heads come up and the lights turn on and their lives come back. And I've been there for their marriages and the birth of their babies. You know, I've had the heartbreak of the loss, when some of them, you know, don't stay. But it really truly has given life meaning in a way that I didn't expect it or didn't even know that I wanted. Which just goes to show you that my ideas will shortchange myself anytime, because I didn't know the kind of joy that I found until I came here and I started doing this work. More on that as we go through this. So thank you.
Thank you both so much. Excuse me. All right. Next reading is going to be on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Right, Ross?
Thanks, Morgan. Yeah, this is a good paragraph. This is part of the chapter that tells me exactly how to work with a newcomer, right? So, you know, I've had obviously gone through this with my sponsor, and that's the way that he explained, you know, this part of the chapter. This is going to give you, and he said, Ross, this is going to give you the instructions on exactly how to work with someone that's new. And this paragraph is that, and it's, you know, we're fortunate in Alcoholics Anonymous today in that I don't have to go pull drunks off of a bar stool. I don't have to go talk to a priest. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to go into hospitals trying to find someone to work with. I mean, I just go, my home group is just a mile down the street from my house and all I have to do is show up there. I don't know how familiar you guys are with Chicks Beach, but there's just a lot of drunks in Chicks Beach and they sometimes happen to show up at We Are Not Saints. And I'm fortunate in that's all that I need to do. And you know, my sponsor was also a living example of these instructions. My sponsor, you know, had me watch him as he went up to newcomers. He had me work in step 12 well before we actually read this paragraph together. It was funny. He had 17 years and I had, you know, a month and a half and a new guy would come in and an older guy would come in and we'd sit together and he'd say, okay, I'm going to go get the older guy. You get the younger guy. And I remember like the fifth time we talked, he said, Ross, are you working with any newcomers? I'm like, well, how am I a newcomer? What do you want me to do? And he said, Ross, I've got 17 years. You've got a month and a half. He said, that newcomer is going to relate far more with you than he is with me. And he said, it's as simple as just telling him what you're doing. So what are you doing, Ross? And I was like, I don't know. What am I doing? He had to kind of pull it out of me. And he said, well, did you join the home group? I was like, yes. He goes, okay, so you got a home group. He said, do you have a sponsor? I'm like, yes, I've got a sponsor. He goes, have we started meeting together to read? Yes, we started meeting together to read. Like, so all these things, I'm like, oh, I didn't. Yes, I guess I maybe am doing some things. And he gave me the okay, right, very early on. Not just the okay, really the instruction to go work with newcomers. So the way that I approach a newcomer is a lot like this paragraph, but in the context of a meeting. Like I don't have to go find someone's wife like they had to do in the beginning, right? Like I got newcomers that they just show up in Chicks Beach. But I don't browbeat anyone. I don't lecture from a moral hilltop. You know, I don't come right out and say, you know what, you need to leave this meeting with a big book. You got to read this big book. You got to get a sponsor. You got to blah, 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 blah. If I was approached that way, I don't know that I would have bought what you guys were trying to sell me. Right. But instead, I had a sponsor and I had folks that approached me that just wanted to get to know me. Right. So when I have a newcomer come into my home group, like we did just this past Sunday, hi, my name's Ross. What's your name? You know, and they give you a handshake and you say, where do you live? Do you live around here? Oh yeah, I just live three blocks down. Okay, cool. Yeah, I just live three blocks down. What brings you here? You know, and it's just, it's a conversation. And that's the whole point, is to get them talking. And you know what? Sometimes they don't want to. And that's just as simple as saying, man, it was great to meet you. We're here every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. You're always welcome to come visit. And they're on their way. But if they want to talk, then it tells me exactly what to talk about. It says to talk about my drinking, talk about my experience. And a lot of times that can be comical. I mean, what alcoholic doesn't like talking about a good throw up and crap your pants story, right? We love that sort of thing. And if they're willing, and if they start to talk and if they start to ask questions, then I can go deeper. But this paragraph tells me exactly what to do. And it says here, and it's underlined, being careful never to moralize or lecture, right? And I can't do that. The minute that I start doing that is the minute that I start preaching. And I haven't met a single alcoholic that likes preaching, right? It's the attraction bit rather than promotion. But again, that's what I get from this paragraph. Like I do most of this book, specific instructions, not only on how to get sober, but how to help someone else get sober. Thanks.
Thanks, Morgan and Ross. Reading this one here, I was thinking again about those women in the recovery house who were sober, active members of AA who carried the message to me. And both of them, by the way, are still sober and we're still best friends, which is cool to grow up together in sobriety. So this might surprise you, but I was a little foggy when I first got sober and I was not the sharpest tool in the shed. So this one in particular, my best friend, she, I was moping around the recovery house, not really sure what I was doing or how I belonged or anything like that. And she, at the time I was a smoker, and she asked me if I wanted to take a walk to Turkey Hill. Now I was new in York, but I knew that Turkey Hill was maybe about four blocks away from the house we were living in. So we start walking. It's a hot July day. And we're walking for about an hour before I'm finally like, shouldn't we be at this Turkey Hill? Like, what are we doing? And the entire time she was 12-stepping me, and she was doing exactly what these passages were talking about. You know, she was talking about, you know, what drinking had been like from her and what she did, and, you know, what her escapades were and things like that. And later on too, it was my sponsor who emulated the same thing for me. And, you know, they didn't browbeat me into anything. What they did is they laid out the kit of spiritual tools at my feet for inspection. And they said, if you want what we have, come along and do what we do. You know, and that in that sort of very sort of simple, low pressure approach was something which was powerfully attractive to me because I felt cared for, you know, I really did for the first time in a really long time. And so, you know, I watched my sponsor too. She would, like Ross had mentioned, you know, she would see a newcomer at a meeting and she would say, come on, let's go talk to them. And she really emulated this example of just friendship and fellowship. You know, walking up to somebody, it's what I continue to do today. At my home group or at another meeting that I'm at, somebody raises their hand and introduces themselves as new. And I walk up to them and just say, hey, how are you? My name's Sheree. We exchange pleasantries. You know, I offer them my number if they're interested. You know, if they want to talk to me a little further, I might talk to them a little bit about my drinking career and what I did. And I let people know that it is possible to recover. You know, I had gone down, you know, pretty far. I sort of sketched that out for you before. And I wasn't sure that a girl who had gone to the places that I had gone could even get sober or that could even really have anything, you know, in my head, I had sunk down so far that I didn't really know that there was anything else out there for me. And, you know, for me to be able to stand there and talk about, you know, what it had been like for me, you know, it keeps it green. And so regardless of how they respond, it reminds me of why I don't ever want to go back. And, you know, if my talk has been sane and calm, I've not only helped myself, but maybe I made a friend. Maybe I planted a seed. You know, I try to leave the results up to God. So I don't necessarily, of course, I want every seed to bloom and to be watered and to bloom. Thank God I have a sponsor who reminds me that that's not my responsibility. My responsibility is just to suit up and show up and be available. And you know, if somebody is interested, and let them have the experience, you know, offer them, you know, again, this message, like, here's what I did. Come along if you want. Same thing that was said to me. So thank you.
Both so much. Right. The next reading is going to be also on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental conditions surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, There may be little chance he can recover by himself. Rob.
Thanks, Morgan. I love, I don't know if you guys have had this experience, but I do like it when a newcomer asks, what do you think? Do you think I'm an alcoholic? I don't know if you've ever had anybody ask you that before. Do you think that I am? Yeah, after you talk to them for 15 minutes or if it's over the course of a few days. And this gives me, most of the time I know it, but this particular reading tells me that I'm no one's judge. Right. Each person has to decide for themselves whether they are or whether they aren't alcoholic, whether they are severely inflicted or whether they're just on the beginning of their journey. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is my own experience, which is what this passage is telling me to do. And I like it here that they haven't asked me to speak, to lean too heavily or lean at all on the spiritual nature, the spiritual remedy. Right. All this first series of talks with a newcomer is designed to do is for me to talk about my drinking experiences and see if they can relate. It's for me to talk about the disease of alcoholism so that they can identify for themselves whether they have it or not. And all these things are true for me. And I have plenty of evidence and plenty of stories and plenty of experience to talk through. That's the other thing that I've learned. This just hit me as I was talking. I don't know that any of us are great with newcomers on the first go, right? But the longer that we do it, I know the longer that I do it, the longer that I do it, and the more men's hands that I walk up to after a meeting and shake it and have these conversations, the better I get at it. Right. The more that I relate my experiences in this account in this manner, the better my message is. And isn't that the whole goal, is to carry a consistent message of the hope and the joys of what recovery from alcoholism can do. But I have plenty to talk about. I can definitely talk about the struggles that I had to stop, that middle phase of my drinking where I wanted to stop, but I couldn't, but it hadn't completely overpowered me yet. And how that progressed to the very end where I was damned if I did, damned if I didn't. And it was a physical thing for me. I had to drink to physically be okay. I can talk about the progression of the disease, and I can talk about all of those attempts at stopping. I've probably made at least 100 sweet promises to my sweet and caring wife. 100 promises to my parents that this is the last time, I'm never going to do that again. I'm so, so sorry. And I meant it. I meant it every single time. But something would always happen. And I would forget about the pain and the misery and the suffering of the last escapade. And something would say, it's okay to drink, or worse, I would just drink. Right? I can relate to that, and I can talk about those things. And now I can do it in a manner, because I've studied this book today, to do it in the manner that it talks about here in the chapter on alcoholism. And I can also talk about the hopeless feature of the malady. You know, I've got a ton of experience through the progression of this disease and through my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, watching people get sober for a long time and to go back out and to instantly be at the same place that they were. And I think the longest bout that I had with not drinking prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous was 6 months. I should get a round of applause for that. I made it 6 months one time without the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the first drink that I picked up after that 6 months, I drank 2 beers. And the next thing that I know, I'm taking acid and doing lines of cocaine. And that was the first day from that 6 month layoff. I was exactly where I was the day that I stopped drinking prior to that 6 months. And it's hopeless. Like I've got no hope. If I were to pick up today, I'm going to end up exactly in that same place. My experience shows it, along with all the experience that I see in Alcoholics Anonymous. I watch so many people that over the years that have gone back out and picked up a drink, and it looks so much harder to pick it up the second time, to pick up the spiritual relief the second time than it does the first. And I'm just not willing to risk that today. I can share that with a newcomer, right? Because of my honest honest experience. And it's funny here that it says at this stage, don't refer to the book. Well, that's kind of hard. Like if I do it at my home group, because we read the book, right? But that's the difference. That's the history lesson, right? That's the history lesson of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I understand the context of this chapter, because I've spent so much time reading it with other people. I've spent so much time in meetings studying this, studying the other pieces of literature that Alcoholics Anonymous gives me. You know, so again, this to me is step-by-step instructions on how to carry a clear message to instill the same hope in a newcomer that was instilled in me when I first met you guys. So with that, I'll pass to Cherie.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. I was sitting here thinking that of how grateful I am that we here in Alcoholics Anonymous speak the language of the heart. You know, because like I said, I was a little foggy when I first got sober. And you know, and what was done for me was exactly what was outlined here. The women who were carrying the message to me, and then my sponsor and other people who I started to run around with in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was taught to stick with the winners. You know, they talked about they talked about the drinking game. I knew they had been where I had been, and I really needed that, because I wasn't sure if I was somebody who could recover. You know, I had augmented my drinking with other things, including becoming a heroin addict. And I remember early on sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the speaker from the podium said, if you tried to solve your alcoholism with heroin, you might be an alcoholic. And I was like, you are my people. Like, I got that. You know, I really did. I 100% got that. It fit. It was just like this little puzzle piece that needed to go right into my heart, you know? And so that stuff is things that I began to, or ideas and things that I began to hold on to, you know, as I started on here. You know, I one of the things I love to do is, you know, when I'm talking with somebody, is I'll talk about that peculiar mental twist, and I'll share with them the time that I was, the first time that I visited you folks, I was, you know, fresh out of a rehabilitation facility. I had been kicked out of college because they don't like it when you sell heroin on their campus. Who knew? I was facing some pretty serious legal charges. I had been, you know, moved out of my apartment back to my dad's house. I was up to my ears in personal problems, legal problems, family problems, you name it. And I convinced my dad to let me have a drink, because I thought that because I needed it, because I was, you know, 21 days dry, and I needed it, and I finally sold him on it. My dad is also an alcoholic. I can say that because he comes into these rooms. And so it was like a pretty easy sell. And he's also, so by the way, he's also sober 15 years. He got sober in jail just like me. So we're like a super classy family. And I, you know, that night I got it in my head that I needed to have a drink, and I was relentless. And I remember I took that, you know, that was what I needed. And regardless of the outside stuff, that I was, all the outside consequences that were a result of my drinking and using, and all I could think about was, is how I just needed a little relief, you know. And I got him to give me that vodka cranberry. I made it and knew instantly it wasn't big enough. And I drank it down, and I felt that craving kick in. And I was as off to the races as I could be. Which just involved more lying and sneaking and manipulation. And I love telling people about that. You know, I love explaining to them that bottles are, because I get asked all the time about different experiences, and I love telling people that bottles are merely a symbol. I have alcoholism. If I could put down the drink and the drugs and be okay, y'all would have a different experience or a different speaker tonight. You know, but my experience has been is that the real problem begins when I put down the substances, because then I'm left with a head that just annihilates me on a regular basis, you know? And I remember, you know, meeting with my sponsor one of the first times, and she explained to me that, when she lay down at night, this, it was like the circus turned on and I got it. Cause I was one of those people who would try to stay sober. And if I laid down while I was sober, it was like, I don't know, a portal to hell in my brain opened up, and just all kinds of, and, you know, and I'm watching and I'm doing all this stuff and I'm checking my watch and I'm thinking, if I fall asleep now, I'll get 4 hours and 53 minutes of sleep, and continuing and continuing and continuing. And, you know, and I couldn't do it on my own. I could not live. I know there's some people who can, not this alcoholic, you know, like I need something else. And I have proven to myself, I cannot recover on my own. And, you know, when I work with a newcomer, whether they can relate to it or not, at the end of the day, again, it's a reminder for me, you know, that I need the solution that's presented in the 12 steps. I simply just can't do it on my own. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you both. Yeah, I almost messed up that on mute. All right, next reading is going to be on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it, to keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual future freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he might have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. All right, Ross?
Thanks again, Morgan. Again, more, I read this again, it's just more instruction for now what my next steps are after I've had either several conversations or one lengthy conversation with a newcomer or someone who's coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and beginning to ask some questions. The first part that I get here is to keep his attention focused mainly on my own personal experience. I explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. And again, this is a part where I feel that now I have the ability to talk a bit about the progression of the disease. And I can relate to that. My dad, one of my absolute heroes, who I'd put in the category of hard drinker, because he's admitted that before. So I'm not saying anything that he himself wouldn't say. But I've got this hard drinking dad, right? But we're good buddies, and I don't realize that I'm doomed, but he does. And so my wife and I, we bought our first house, and this is probably 11 years before I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way that I used to be as a 25-year-old, I had my coffee pot, and then I had a handle of Jim Beam that sat right behind the coffee pot because my liquor cabinet was in the other room and around the corner. but I kept the Jim Beam right beside the coffee pot, because the first thing that I did as a 25-year-old when I would get home from work to ease the stress and the pain of that, whatever the day threw at me, was I would pour myself a nice tall Jim Beam. And that's just what I did. And so my dad comes over and he says, man, every time I come over here, you know, you got a handle of Jim Beam that just is constantly changing volumes. And he said, don't you think it's a little weird that you just keep it out on your counter? I mean, it's here every time I come over. And I don't think that that's strange, because I ask him, I tell him, I said, Dad, well, if I keep it in the liquor cabinet, then that means that I got to walk all the way in the other room to grab the bottle and bring it back into the kitchen to make my drink. And that doesn't make any sense to me. I know that I'm going to drink it. And he just shakes his head and he says, you might have a problem. And I don't pay attention. So a few years go by and my wife and I, you know, we meet my parents every Tuesday for Mexican food, Taco Tuesday. And every Tuesday we meet. And every Tuesday, my wife and I, with my kids in tow, proceed to get absolutely hammered every Tuesday night at dinner. And so my dad one Tuesday says, man, don't you think you can come out to family dinner and not suck down two large margaritas and a beer? Like, don't you think like just one Tuesday you could do that? And me not understanding that I have a problem, I don't realize the predicament that I'm in. I say, well, why not? I mean, it's Tuesday and I had a rough day at the office and I've got little kids and I got a wife that nags me. I mean, I'm going to drink. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with this, right? So my loved ones are starting to tell me that I'm already in a predicament and I don't see it. I don't see that every time I get home, I run to the drink. Every problem that I have, I run to the drink. Every time I wish to celebrate a success, I run to the drink. And I have no idea that I'm in this trouble. I can talk about that. I can talk about the hopelessness of alcoholism. And I can talk about it because I can offer a solution that's contained right here in this book, right? And that solution has worked for me, and I've seen it work for countless others. And here it tells me that I can start to stress the spiritual nature of this program, because there, yeah, I make no bones about it. And maybe people in my home group and people here in the local AA community, maybe they get upset about hearing the three-letter word God so often. And they, you know, they hear talk of what God has done in my life and how God has removed this desire to drink and how God seems to show up when I need him to the most. And he has a tendency to solve all my problems if I just take a few simple actions. Well, at this point, the book tells me that I can freely talk about it. And I can freely talk about it in terms that are simple. I can freely talk about it in terms that are not prejudiced. I can simply talk about a higher power. And it doesn't need to be mine. And it can be yours. And we've got this book. And I could read a chapter that talks specifically about how you can choose your own conception of a higher power. And you don't even have to believe in one. All you have to do is be willing. At this point, I can talk about the first three steps. And I can talk about the first step being, I can't. And I can talk about the second step saying, but he can. And I can talk about the third step, which says, if I let him. Right? And I can start to have these conversations again in very simple terms with a book that backs it up. With experience that backs it up. So here I'm free to start to have that conversation. And to be honest with you, it's a conversation that I love to have. I, you know, again, I don't know if the talk about God rubs people the wrong ways in my local AA community, but God is the most important part of my life. And, you know, what does the ninth step say? That we should never shy away from what our Creator has done for us, right? We should freely talk about that. And at this point in the conversation, the book gives me the ability to go ahead and do that, because guess what? It works, and they know that it works, and they know when to have the conversation. So if I follow these instructions, and I should have some level of success with any newcomer that shakes my hand. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
So thinking about this a little bit, and I had already told you a little bit about how I was 12-stepped. I before had mentioned how attractive that y'all made it to me, because I had, you know, I had a lot of people in my life tell me frothy emotional appeal, right? Which didn't suffice. I had, you know, teachers and counselors who said to me, Sheree, you're so young, you're so smart, right? Like, you should be able to get this. I had judges and probation officers who really, you know, offered up a good, you know what I mean? Said the other things. I like to often say that, you know, you're not, well, I won't say this, but I'm a, early on in my drinking, I recognized the value of a yes question. And what I mean by that is when the judge says, Miss Beam, by the way, I'm also a Beam. So I had a judge who, the judge would say to me, Miss Beam, were you sorry what you have done? That is a yes question, whether I believe it or not, you know, right? So I got to know the yes questions quite early in my drinking. But they couldn't, although those wonderful, amazing, well-intentioned people could not offer me something that was the solution to what I needed. They all told me why I should stop drinking. They never told me how to stop and stay stopped. And that was the big difference here in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I had these amazing women who presented a message to me that said, like, here's what we did. Here's a simple program of action outlined in the big book. And you know, if you take these actions, you too can get what we have. And you know, I was introduced to, my sponsor said, whatever your God is, you better get one. And it has to be bigger than you, and it can't be you, you know? And I also had a wonderful woman in AA when I, right around the time after I had done a third step, she made it really simple for me. She said, Sheree, she said, you know, a third step is at this point, it just, cause I wasn't sure if I was going to stay or go. And she said, a third step is just a decision to go on with the rest of the steps and to stop trying to do what you know to be wrong in your heart, and to start trying to do what you know to be right. And that kind of really simple direction is really helpful for me, because my moral compass was spinning out of control when I got sober. But I had a pretty good idea of what was wrong, of what I shouldn't do anyways. And so that was kind of how I lived my life for a little while. It's like, okay, I know that doing that would be wrong, so I better not do that. You know, but I latched on to the spiritual aspect of the program and you know, got sober with this sponsor who told me things like, God is like your best friend. So just talk to him like that. And that's the kind of stuff that I introduce to the people who I work with today, like, bigger than you. You know, are you willing to believe in something other than you and your own ideas? I'll often say to my sponsees, are you willing to believe that I believe? And if that's where you have to start, I'm completely okay with that. And I keep it as, you know, simple as it can be, the way it advises here when I'm working with somebody. And I talk to them about how God has worked in my life, and it's, God has done some impressive things. You know, I brought you a girl, and I'll tell them this too. I mean, I brought you a girl who was, you know, disowned from her family, who was broken, who was, you know, the only thing I basically had to my own name was a trash bag of clothes, you know. And really, truly, I was raised up from the scrap heap of life by God, AA, the 12 steps and sponsorship, you know. And you brought me to where I became now, you know, what I'm like now. You know, I became employable, you know, so I'm an employee. You took somebody who ran away from every relationship and you turned them back into a daughter and into a sister and to an aunt. You gave me ways to be a wife, you know, and my husband and I have been married, you know, 11 years. And I often talk, I often tell the people who I work with when I'm talking about this God thing that You know, my ideas are limited, but when I place myself in God's hands, things turn out better than I could have possibly ever imagined. You know, that I would have shortchanged myself if I had gotten what I wanted when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that I can't even imagine the potential that can happen when I let this God thing work in my life. I'll give you an example. You know, when I was a couple of years sober, I was working as a journalist. And unfortunately, when I went back to college, I made amends to that college and I went back and I graduated and I started working as a journalist. And a couple months into that career, I lost that job because they went out of business. And thank God for sponsorship, because I sulked for like a month, you know, just like sat on my couch, watched Law and Order, went back to the restaurant, served pancakes angrily. And, you know, thank God for my sponsor, because she came over. And again, it's that simple language here that my sponsor continues to use with me, even having had experience in the program. And she said to me, "Sheree, you better stop telling God what you think you need and start asking what he has in store for you." And again, that simple language of just okay. And, you know, I'll tell you what I said. I always wanted a master's degree. And so I went back and I did that. And then somewhere along the lines, somebody said to me, "Do you want to be a doctor? Do you want to have a doctorate?" And I was like, "No way. I'm too burned out. It's not going to happen." And in 2014, I got to call my dad and tell him his little girl's going to be a doctor. And then 2020, because I have an impeccable sense of timing, I defended my dissertation. And I tell you that stuff not because the world needs another English PhD, but because I can tell you with God and Alcoholics Anonymous, y'all can take a girl running the streets of Philly shooting heroin in her neck and put her in a classroom where they're going to call her Dr. Beam. You know, I'm forever grateful for having been able to have that experience. But when I work with newcomers, I also talk about the things that maybe aren't as sexy. Like I talk about being able to sleep at night. I talk about being able to like show up for my niece and nephew today, to be able to look myself in the mirror, to feel at peace at peace with myself and the world. You know, and so outside accomplishments are amazing, but I also think sometimes the best thing I can do is just emphasize those really simple things. Cause I was somebody who couldn't get asleep. You know, I told you I couldn't get to sleep at night because of the circus in my head. And it's been a long time since I lost a night of sleep. Maybe the last time was when I looked at my student loans, but that's another story for another day. But it's been a long time. I didn't even lose a whole night, just like an hour. But that's it's been a long time since I've lost a night of sleep to alcoholism, you know, or I woke up wanting to die. So thank you.
All right. Thank you both so much for an awesome meeting and a very fast hour. We are out of time. That booted me out of being able to see my, okay, there we go. All right, sorry about that, y'all. All right, David's sharing the Seventh Tradition QR codes. The Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While each contribution cover, each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. There's also in the chat a link to the PayPal as well. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA related announcements? Anybody got any announcements? David, you got our flyer to share? I know that this home group is having a speaker, formerly known as Supper and a Speaker, but we are not doing a giant potluck because we are on Zoom. That's going to be at the end of this month, January 31st at 7 p.m. It's going to be Scott T. from Utica, New York. Same Zoom link as this meeting that you joined tonight. Same time, same place, last Monday of this month. We'd love to see y'all there. And I don't see any others. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. All right, sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be here in the Zoom room after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, you may also send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Yeah, oh, we're at 8:01. All right, so in closing, let's thank our panel again. And I think everybody should be able to unmute. You want to unmute, you're welcome to. We'll go ahead and close it out with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.
Amen. Amen. Thank you all so much. Thanks, Ross.
That was amazing. Thank you both so much.
Welcome. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, Sheree.